we're really excited about this session. We've got some tremendous...
And we're going to begin with giving each of the panelists that have come today about 10 to 12 minutes. And we'd like for them to take the first part of that time and to share with you what God has them doing in the marketplace, what it is that they're involved with, and then secondly, how they're making their life count for Christ and how they relate their Christianity to the job that God has brought them into. And so we're going in alphabetical order today. We're going to start with Mr. Stephen Biswell, who is the President and Chief Operating Manager for Nash DeCamp. And it's a fresh fruit and vegetable packer and distributor. And God has used Mr. Biswell behind the scenes here on our campus. And maybe he'll have opportunity to share that a little bit too. And he'll be followed by Mr. Rob Iverson, who is the Vice President of Distribution for Carnation Incorporated. He oversees the product from production to sale. And I found out in the session that we had right before this one that Carnation is a subsidiary. Is that correct? Is Nestle Corporation. And together they represent the largest food distributor in the world. And so God has strategically placed him in a vice presidential role in that company. And then Mr. Dean Rollis, who is an attorney. He's been an attorney for the past 7 years, and he's now with the firm of Rosen, Watchell, and Gilbert. And so these men will be sharing in that order, and we'll give you gentlemen about 10 to 12 minutes each.
Okay, thank you very much. In my career, I started out, I went to college in the Central Valley, Fresno State University, and graduated there with a B.S. in accounting, and thought that I wanted to become an accountant, a CPA, and as many of you probably have during your college career, at this time, your college years, if you're a freshman or your senior or doing your fifth year, you're wondering what you want to do. And I think that at times over the last 15, 20 years for myself, you still wonder what you want to do even though you're in a position. So I wouldn't be too alarmed at that. But upon graduating from Fresno State, I went to work for a company called Price Waterhouse, who is a public accounting firm. Many of you may know it, may not. It's probably most famous because they give the ballots out at the Academy Awards. And I saw some people recognize that. And it's kind of odd because one of our panelists that worked for Carnation, I used to audit Carnation, so it's kind of old homework here.
They never found a thing.
They were very honest. So after working for Price Waterhouse, I came to work for the company I'm working for now named Nash DeCamp. Nash DeCamp, we are growers, packers, and shippers of fresh fruits and vegetables. My career started as an accountant, as actually controller of the company. And upon coming to the company, there was many severe problems within their internal controls and their problems in their accounting area. So it was quite easy for me to get a good start with all these fresh ideas that I had from Pricewaterhouse and out of school. They didn't have any real trained accountants at that time that had degrees in CPAs and this type of thing. So it was quite easy for me to excel at the beginning, and I rose through the ranks as controller, treasurer, vice president, executive vice president, to presently being president of the company. What we do is I find fascinating because things are constantly changing through the year. We have 200-300 growers that off and on up and down the state, starting in Palm Springs and going through up to Lodi. And so we ship grapes and peaches, plums, nectarines, cherries, and just about any conceivable piece of fruit, vegetable, we have it. And so my responsibility is to oversee the operations, each of the facilities. So we have five different locations, and they have managers, and to keep them actively pursuing growers, because without growers, we don't have all the fruit that we need. We only farm about 1,300 acres. And there are several thousand acres that we handle for the growers. So we don't have to, we have to worry as much about getting product as we do selling the product. One of the things that has been a big challenge in the past month or so, as many of you have read, that the Chilean two infamous grapes that had the cyanide put in them. Well, one of the things that we do also do is we import Chilean grapes. So this last month has been somewhat of a hectic month, and we have Chilean growers down in Chile that at every time I talk to them on the phone, the first 20 minutes is spent lecturing myself about how bad our government is and how unfair our government is. And I don't know if I'll disagree or not disagree with that, but it's obvious that something that Two Berries has totally interrupted our whole business, and we came to a complete standstill for a week. And it was kind of amazing to go into my sales office and see seven salesmen sitting around doing absolutely nothing, and because they couldn't sell any fruit. And so the effect of the Chilean fruit has really been a test, and it's been an opportunity, I think, for myself as being a Christian in my business to see how I would handle that, because there has been a lot of panic. There has been a lot of people thinking that this is going to transfer over into our own fruit industry, that somebody's going to contaminate some fruit in the beginning, and we will utterly devastate our industry. And I think in trusting in the Lord in this, and knowing that He's going to work it out, and not for myself to worry, has been something that a lot of my contemporaries have been able to, I think, witness in my life. At least I pray that they have. Some things that come up in my life as I have grown with this company is that, and how it relates to how my witness at my employment counts for Christ, is something that I want to try to relate to each one of you as you will be graduating and you will be going into to business or whatever field that you endeavor to go into. Because when you come to that point that you graduate and you come to work for a company, the majority of the time you are going to have tremendous peer pressure. Pressure that you even may feel here, you may feel in your high school and some other things. And it continues, and it can even, I think, in some cases, accelerate. And so you're going to choose how you're going to handle that particular pressure. And I accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior when I was in junior high. And but I had somewhat of a liberal church as I attended. And I didn't have some of the biblical teaching that I had received, after I got out of college. And I can somewhat look at you and say, some of the teaching that you're getting, I think, is just fantastic. And as my daughter, 15, and my son, 12, get closer to the college years, a master's, of course, will be one college that I'm considering. But things that, opportunities that I have had to not only witness for Christ as a... In my affairs for the day, but just in the way that I can conduct myself, is I have had an opportunity that on many occasions, using an example, we handle fruit for growers, and so there are many documents that go back and forth as to what we owe a grower. And we came to one point, and this is when I was not in the position I am in now. We came to a point that we owed this grower about $25,000. And the grower had acknowledged to our accounting people that he was paid in full and that there was no more. They closed their books and they were finished. So we went back and researched and found that we really did owe them $25,000. And so several of the people in the company felt this is a tremendous way to make a profit. We take the $25,000 in, we credit sales, and that'd be done with it. So I had a choice to make at that time, and I could choose to say, that's right, I mean, that's going to help me, I'm coming up, and then the company needs to make more money, and the grower thinks he's paid in full, so you're right, you can justify it, you can always rationalize sin sometimes, if it's just, if you don't call it sin, but it was, and so the end result was is that I took on another vice president, and to say that there's no question what we're going to do here, we're going to give the money back to the grower. He said what they don't think they're going to need it. So we worked it out. Anyway, the money went back to the grower. The grower very much appreciated it. I think in the long run, we have a very solid grower there now, knowing that we were honest about it. I have a vice president that looks at me now and thinking that in any dealing that he's going to do, he says, well, I know you're going to try to do the righteous thing on this. and he says righteous in somewhat of a slanderous way. But I think he's grown to respect my position, and not only because I'm his boss, and that's maybe easy to respect, but in sales, sometimes salespeople tend to be quite independent, and they can somewhat go their own way, I think, as Rob sounds like he knows too. So, but since that time, I had a chance to take this vice president that we had to a Christian businessman's luncheon, where the gospel was preached by a person in education, and there was a real opportunity to witness to him. He's known that I'm a Christian. He knows where my values are. But I did take that opportunity, which I think that a lot of times those of us in business in the world do not really take the opportunity one-on-one to witness to a fellow worker. And I feel that this is where God has put me in this position that I'm in. And sometimes maybe I do use my position as being as being the president of the company to strongly encourage someone to say, go with me. And they are encouraged, to, of course, to come with me. So, not that I would say, well, if you don't, you know, you're not going to get a raise or something. But it's just, I guess they try to play the politics. But the end result was is that this individual has said, well, you know, that's really, really kind of nice. And I think God is, you know, I believe in God. And I think that, but I just don't know about Christ. And so I had a chance to tell him before we got out of the car that the most important decision that he will make in his mind is what will he do with Christ? Will he say that he was just a lunatic? Or will he say that he were really the Son of God and he was God? And we left the moment at that, and I had good eye-to-eye contact with him, and he knows how I feel, and I do feel that the Lord will provide a way that to maybe water this. The seed has been planted to water. So I would encourage each one of you at any point in your careers, as you see somebody, you know, I'm sure you have had more experience in sharing your testimony and sharing your faith than I have when I was your age. But I think anywhere down the line, you're going to be challenged and persecuted, as I have been in many different ways. You become alienated, but I feel that to leave you with a few thoughts as to the importance I feel in a company that we pack and ship fresh fruits and vegetables, that you think, well, how can you be used of God there? And because you're in a position that there is no, when I came there, there was no Christian that I could see in the organization. And we have 60, 70 main people, and we have probably 300 that are in outlying areas that we affect. And since that time, I have come to find out there are other Christians there. But through this time, there has been people that I've been able to share with, and now they can come to me with questions, maybe some baby Christians, that this one individual accepted the Lord about 6 months ago. And he came in and couldn't wait to tell me the next day that he came in. And I don't know if the Lord used me or not, and it doesn't really matter. So we have a nice dialogue. I was very pleased to hear right before I came in to the meeting, I called back, and one of our individuals that works for me quite closely, his wife just went in and suspected of having cancer. And we've been praying for her, and he said the results were completely clear. There was no cancer, so I'm very joyous. And it's nice to be able to have a Christian that you can share within your employ, in your employment. And other people don't understand, you know, the things you talk about. But something I want to encourage you in is that you live your lives, okay, and right now you are a role model. When you go to work for somebody, you're going to be a role model as soon as you go to work. You yourselves are looking for role models. You're looking for somebody to say, that's what I want to be like, okay? Christ is our ultimate role model. But for the role model here, you're going to look for somebody that you want to say, that's the way I would like to be, a Christian, successful in business, has made it to the top maybe, but not necessarily, and is ethical and stands up. But you are going to live your life. You're going to be tempted. You're going to get into situations that the salesman in the back are into the dirty joke telling. You're into the profanity in our industry seems to be just widespread because we deal with a lot of truck drivers and a lot of other people that goes on. Your language will, number one, set you apart if you choose
to be holy, as God has called us to be holy. And how you live your life with your finances. Do you get in debt? Do you take out your credit card? Is that your first goal? You know, do you want to get the big house? Do you want to get the Beamer? Or what do you want to get? And, you know, those things are fine, but don't go into debt, because that example will come back, and then you'll be plagued, and you will need to make more money because you have the debt. And you won't be, you can be less guided by the Spirit, because at that time you will say, I need more money because I have to pay my bills. It's not that I want a different position, because that's where Christ wants me to be. And that's a lesson that I did not learn in probably until 10 or 12 years ago. And in my earlier time, I did not learn that. And I would pray that each one of you would learn that in your early careers. Thank you.
Well, I'm Rob Iverson. I grew up in Wisconsin and got out of high school in 1964. I had real no desire to go to college. There was this thing called Vietnam lingering on the horizon at that time, and the more I thought about that and the fact that they were starting to draft people for that, I thought college didn't seem like a bad idea. You could get a deferment. So I went to college and had really no desire as to what I would get a degree in. I finally wound up getting a degree in business. My mother, bless her heart, never really understood what a degree in business is. And she would ask me, what are you going to do? And I'd say, well, I'm going to get a degree in business. And she'd say, well, what does that mean? I said, well, you go to work for a business. And she'd say, well, which one? And I said, well, you don't know. And she, you know, you could see in her mind, she'd say, well, why would you go to 4 years of college not knowing who you want to go to work for? And she wanted me to be a lawyer or something, and she could tell her friends, you know, what I was going to do, and that, you know, that made sense. And so anyway, I got a degree in business. I served, after that, I lost my deferment, had to serve 4 years in the Marine Corps. The last two months of that, my boss, when I was in the Marine Corps, told me that I could have those 2 months to interview for potential jobs. And so I went to all the classes on how to interview and so forth. And after 2 months of that, I became extremely proficient at interviewing. And I could interview with the best of them, and I got many job offers as a result of that. And I thought, I was not a Christian at the time, and I thought that a guy ought to get into sales. And that's where you're going to make the big bucks and really have a dynamic career that way. I got a job with IBM. I was going to sell computers. I had to go back to Kansas City to start that job. On the way back there, I stopped in to visit a friend who I'd been with in the Marine Corps before, and he convinced me that I ought to take a job with Carnation. I didn't have the slightest idea who they were and what I'd be doing there, but I trusted this guy, and so I turned down the job with IBM and started out as a supervisor in a warehouse in Illinois for Carnation. 3 years later, I was transferred out here, and I've kind of worked my way up the ladder as a result of that. I'm now what's called vice president of distribution. Some people call that logistics. Some people call that material management. Basically, I oversee about five functional groups in the company. The first is our physical distribution. We have about eight distribution centers throughout the country that distribute our products. So most of you here probably think of Carnation being the milk and the dairy business. It really is a small portion of our business. Half of our volume today is in pet food. Mighty Dog and things like that are hot items. Very competitive, but very profitable. People will pay incredible amounts of money for pet food to take care of their cats and dogs. Working women, you might be interested in, are on a guilt trip when they have pets home all day long and they want to feed them something special because they've been neglected them all day. So, anyway, so we fill that void in their life rather nicely. order of magnitude, that costs Carnation about $25 million to run that whole system. There's about 300 people involved in that, physically moving the products around and so forth. Another group is transportation. Those are guys that just physically move the stuff around. those, there's about 10 of those folks. We have a budget of about $75 million, and they're trying to get those costs down and so forth and help us move things more efficiently. Another group is order entry, customer service type function. There's a group of about 30 people who are taking orders from customers and providing information back to them on when they might get their shipment and things like that. The grocery business is very tough nowadays. Our customers are very demanding in that area of transportation and distribution. Most of our customers here in Los Angeles, as an example, Vaughn's, they give you about 30 minutes to deliver your order to them. A 30-minute window. You call for an appointment time. You have 30 minutes, and if you miss that, you're late, and they get very irritated at you, and sometimes it takes 2 or 3 days before they'll give you another appointment to re-deliver it. And meanwhile, you're out of stock. That's bad in the food industry, is to be out of stock, very bad. We have a production scheduling group in our company that's about 30 people, and what they do is they physically tell the plants what to make and where to ship it to. Another operation is a private truck fleet there. We have about 100 people or so involved in the management of a private truck fleet of about 300 or so tractors operating all 48 states. So that's basically what I do, and I think what the Lord has really taught me through all of this, and I didn't become a Christian until about 6 or 7 years ago. I was always a very, what I thought, a very religious guy, but I was never taught anything, and I no one ever told me anything about having a personal relationship with Christ, and I had to. It wasn't until I actually went to Grace about 6 years ago that I had to come to grips with the fact that I never made a personal commitment, nor had I ever allowed Christ to be the Lord of my life. And a significant change in my my approach to my career happened in that time. And I think I'd like to leave you with two things that I think you need to learn to understand. The first one is commitment. The second one is a force, or contentment. The second one is a force for righteousness. You have to learn to be content. And when you start your job, wherever it is, there's this, what I see over and over again, is particularly kids coming out of college, you all want to be, you know, all want to be a manager. You all want to supervise people. Nobody really wants to do any work. And you're kind of groomed to say, well, you know, I've been in school for 4 years, you know, I'm an administrator, I'm something. You have to learn that the first job you get may be the only job you ever have. And you have to learn contentment, and that is, can I be satisfied that the Lord has put me here and that this may be the only job that I ever have? And can I be satisfied with that? And can I be useful to the Lord in that capacity? Because if you don't, you're always looking ahead at that other job, that other promotion, that other opportunity, and you lose sight of all the opportunities the Lord is giving you to be effective in the job that you have right there. That happened to me about 4 years ago. My boss was getting ready to retire. I thought I might have an opportunity for that job. He had never said a thing about it. Whether I was a potential candidate, I was vying for the job with another guy. And I finally had to say, Lord, I'm satisfied with what you've given me. The job that I have, if that's all that I ever have, I can be satisfied with that. And 3 weeks later, my boss called me in and said, Rob, you know, you have a lot of potential, and we need to get you ready for opportunities that are going to be opening up when I retire. And I thought, I knew in my heart that the only reason the Lord gave me that opportunity was that I humbled myself and said, I don't want it. And if you want to give it to me, I'll take it, but I don't need it. So you need to understand what contentment is, and you need to know how to deal with it to be effective. The other one is a force for righteousness. You say, how can I be a force for righteousness? I'll wind up being the low guy on the totem pole in this organization here, and I can't influence anyone. Well, you can have a significant influence on people because people are watching you. people understand, if people understand that you are a Christian, they're going to be watching you very closely to see what your testimony is. Unfortunately, I see two extremes. I see people who have absolutely no testimony. I see Christians who claim they're Christians that you couldn't pick them out of a crowd. They act like, talk like, and think like all the other pagans in the rest of the company. That's one extreme. The other extreme is the classic Jesus freak that we sometimes label them. These are the people that every known Christian symbol is on the back end of their car. And they come to work and they wear all the buttons and the hats, everything, Jesus loves you, and they're always going, wow, I really love you. And, you know, and they turn people off. They just totally turn people off. The unfortunate thing that I've noticed is that most of them are very poor workers to start with. They view themselves like on some mission to evangelize the entire company, and they believe that's what they're being paid for. Well, you're first and foremost, you're being paid to give your employer a fair return for the money he's paying you. That ought to be the thing that first makes you stand out in your organization, is that you are a good employee, that you do more than what's expected of you, and that you try to get along with your fellow employees. It's incredible today the number of people, that Christians alike, who absolutely refuse to attempt or try to get along with their fellow employees. And then they wonder why they never get promoted, when they don't realize that much of your advancement in a company has to do with your ability to get along with your fellow employees. When I took over an example of how one can be a force for righteousness. And in my company, people think I'm just very religious. A guy was in my office the other day and said something about he was religious, and then he realized I was there and I heard this comment, and he said, well, not as religious as you are, Rob. So they just think I'm extreme. You know, I go to church every Sunday. You know, it's kind of odd to some of them that you would do that. But you can be a force for righteousness, and you can have a positive change. I took over a group of our distribution group, and there was about 10 managers in there. And when I took that over about 10 years ago, the prime event when this group got together was drinking and chasing women at night. So I thought, well, you know, maybe somehow we need to find something else to do when we get together. They have a business meeting, and over the last 7 to 8 years, I've seen one guy come to know the Lord, seen another guy who believes he's saved, but he really isn't. Today, very few of these guys drink, and most of them are in bed by 10 o'clock at night. So I know that in some way I've been able to contribute to that, but you can be a force and you can have an impact on people, and the unsaved world are watching us very carefully. They want us to stumble, because when we stumble, that means that there's nothing unique or special about us, and that the religious stuff we're projecting is just a fad, and it fades away like everything else. And what Christ is really looking for is people over the long haul. He's not looking for sprinters. And you've all seen them come into the church and they're on fire and they're gone in about a year. What he's looking for is people over the long haul that over 10 years can be effective and be a force. So my time's up.
Center stage. My name is Dean Rollis. When I was asked to speak to you at chapel, I was told I had an hour, so I prepared about a 30-page sermon note, single space. I don't know how I'm going to get through this in 10 minutes, but I'll try. Once upon a time, on a dreary night, just kidding. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law now since I graduated law school in 1980. I'm married, have one child, 1 year old yesterday, and another one on the way. I became a Christian when I was a sophomore in college. I went to college at USC, where I met my wife my senior year in law school. We got married after I graduated. Also went to law school at USC. Got caught up in the fraternity life, a bunch of other fun activities, played college ball at SC, and basically enjoyed my time while I was in college. I wouldn't say that, at least during my undergraduate days, my life really made any impact for Christ or for the family of God. I basically was living in the flesh, and then God said, well, it's time to straighten Dean out. So sometime my senior year, he started to take a 2x4, which is the only thing that would really get through to my head. It said that it's time to start changing. So during my time in law school, I really devoted a lot of my life to, I hope, what was setting my priorities straight. And for me, at that time, it was really concentrating on my ministry and my growth in the Lord. As I said, I graduated in 1980. From there, I joined a firm, small firm downtown Los Angeles. And at that point in time, they had an opening in one of their departments, which I knew nothing about, and that was bankruptcy. I didn't take any kind of class that would groom me for that area of the law, and I was just a duck out of water. But as the years went on, I learned the hard way. I took classes, read books, articles, anything I could get a hold of to try and train me in that field. And I hope that I've come a long way. I still have a way to go, but I hope that I've become somewhat proficient in that area. I stayed with that firm for about 7 years. Can't tell by the name. I can tell you what kind of firm it is. It's a firm comprised mostly of Jewish people. And I tell you, this is an eye-opener for me. I was brought up mostly in a bubble world, protected by my parents from a lot of the influences of worldly affairs, but I've really learned quite a bit in my year there, since I've been there. A passage in Proverbs talks about, as iron sharpens iron, so does one man sharpen another. Unfortunately for me, I don't have a role model at my firm. In fact, I think I'm only one of two people, maybe three people, who are Christians in the firm. The firm is about 70 some odd attorneys. We have three offices. We probably have a staff of over 150. And so among over 200 employees and personnel, there's maybe three that I know that are Christians. One is my secretary. One is the head of the work processing department, and then I'm the only attorney that I know of. Let me tell you the kind of role models that I have. We have one partner who spent the weekend in Washington, D.C., participating in the march on keeping abortion intact under the Supreme Court decision set in 73 on Roe versus Wade. That was a surprise to me. I figured that Jewish people, they abide by the Old Testament, what we refer to the Old Testament. They refer to it as something else, and that life is sacred to them. Not so. They don't believe that life commences until after birth, and you take a few breaths and the heart's beating. I just found that out recently about what the position of at least this person's position, and I asked others who were Jewish. And they said, yeah, that's basically the principle that we adhere to. And I said, I think I'll have to do a little study on that. There's another partner, and she's been a partner for quite some time, and sometime about 3 or 4 months ago, I think, I noticed that she wasn't around. I said to one of the other attorneys in the office, where's Carol? I haven't seen her for quite a while. Oh, she's on she's on a honeymoon. I said, well, that's fantastic. Who'd she get married to? Oh, she got married to her girlfriend. Her what? Her girlfriend? That was my reaction. I couldn't hide anything. I was just dumbfounded. We have a number of gays in our office and lesbians. That is one of the more pronounced ones. We have another partner who is married, has a child, and has no qualms about finding staff, female staff, fortunately, at least if you want to think of it that way, to spend most of his time with. sleeping around, and that obviously is unfortunate, but that's the kind of role model that I have. Another partner, who I didn't know for about the first 2 months that I was working there, I met on the elevator, but I didn't know who he was. I'd never met him before. And he was dressed in kind of a plaid coat, khaki pants, real casual. And I said, he must work here because he's up in the 21st floor. I'm in the 20th, and it's a down elevator, and I saw him in the elevator, so I must be up in 21. So I said, hi, my name is Dean Rollis. You must work with the firm. Hi, my name is Harvey Rosen. And what was my reaction? Outwardly, very cool. Inwardly, I go, Harvey Rosen? I mean, one of the main partners in the firm. Nice guy, but I don't know him. He's the kind of guy who takes his position to the hilt. He considers himself, I think, at least from my perspective, as above many of the employees, of which I'm one. And if it's convenient to him and it's to his benefit to talk to you, he'll do so. Otherwise, you're not even in the room. I had occasion to be talking with one of the other partners who I'm accountable to, and he walked in with his girlfriend, and he introduced his girlfriend to my partner, my partner's mother, and I'm just standing in there in the room, just kind of like blending into the furniture, you know? And then his girlfriend came up to me and says, hi, I'm so-and-so. I said, well, I'm Dean Rollis, nice to meet you. And Mr. Rosen just kind of sitting there, didn't say anything. And so I'm thinking, how much do I count for here in this firm? Those are just a few of the examples of the kind of role models that I have. Well, needless to say, those are not the kind of role models that I want to imitate my life after. And so it's very hard for me, I find, to maintain a consistent walk or a consistent presence counting for the Lord. I have to rely a lot and primarily upon my wife and my best friends. I get the biggest question, I guess, presented to me that I want to talk about today is what does that mean? How do I like make my life count for Christ in my workplace? There's many aspects of that, but the one that's hit me the hardest most recently is the one I want to share with you today. I have determined, because of my my relationship with my wife and my close friends, that there's a lot of deep-rooted sin in my life, and I can share this with you in that. I have found that Jesus Christ, at many points, is not my Lord. My job is my Lord. I'm very goal-oriented. I'm not too strong in relationships, which is an obvious weakness of mine, even which spreads into my relationship with God. And I see that, and I see how it impacts my relationship with my wife, my friends, any relationship, my relationship with God, my relationship with people at work. And seeing that, my wife and I and these friends are helping me to kind of work through that and kind of come out of that, see that, push that sin down and make Jesus Christ as the center place of my life. And without getting into a lot of details about how he's done that, what have I seen in terms of impact upon my work? People think that I'm religious. People who know me know that I'm a Christian. People come up to me when they have a problem and they say, Dean, what does the Bible say about this? I had one gal who came and she said her mother had cancer. I mean, what do I say to that? I say, well, she asked me, what does the scriptures say? So I kind of helped her through that and gave her some scriptural principles on how to deal with the emotions. She was really hurting along with her family, and she wanted to know how to deal with that. There's other people in my office who I work with that are as foul-mouthed as I've ever heard. When I was playing ball at SC, I never heard things as bad as what I hear in my office. I move into a particular office where a few of them are gathering, and you know what they're talking about. Conversation stops just like that because I've walked into the room. Not that I demand that they stop, but I think that the Spirit of God really is convicting them, at least in my presence, that here's a guy who doesn't tolerate foul mouth language, bad jokes, and the conversation changes. And they don't mind that. They do it because they respect me, or actually respect what I stand for.
And I let them know that it's not me. At least I try to. When I have the opportunity, I share with them, what is it about my life that's so different? Oftentimes, I don't have that opportunity, and I don't want to be this, quote, Jesus freak, as was described before, where I could blow people off, because I've seen that happen, and I've done it myself. This is a way of life ministry for me. If you think about what a full-time ministry is, it doesn't matter whether it's in the marketplace or whether you're out in the mission fields in Africa. You're in a full-time ministry, and that's what God calls you to do, and that's what I want to live for. I guess that's pretty much it. I want to leave us plenty of time here for question and answers, so I'll turn it back to the podium.
Great, thank you. Isn't this great? Just to hear what God's doing in individual lives in the workplace. It's really exciting. Now we want to open it up for question and answer and give you an opportunity. If you have a question for one, two, or all of the gentlemen that are with us today, I'd like to invite you just to stand up and address them with whatever question you have. And so let's open it up for Q&A. It's usually the first one's the hardest one. And then right at the end, we're packed in with several. And so somebody go ahead and break the ice. Yes, sir. Okay.
Oh, Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin?
That in Madison?
It was in River Falls, State University of the branch of the campus, main campus. Yeah.
Okay. Other questions?
I don't.
I pray a lot at my job. some of the, I've had a chance myself with another individual that came to accept the Lord some 6 months after that. His father had he thought was going to attempt to commit suicide, and he was just beside himself. He's a great big fellow. He's just must weigh 300 pounds and just looks like he could go through any door he wants, and he really humbled himself, and we had a chance to pray. In meetings, this type of thing, I don't start out with a prayer or whatever. But yet in an industry council that I'm on, in the fresh fruit business, we have what we call a grape and tree fruit league. And this grape and tree fruit league is comprised of all the major shippers and growers in the whole San Joaquin Valley. So I serve on a board there and recently have become secretary treasurer of the organization, that's totally volunteer. And for the last two times that we've met as a group of maybe 400 people at a convention, they used to always, we would pray before we would eat. And it was a very obvious lack of it over the last year, and I think it was due to the chairman that we have. So I called and asked that, why did we not pray beforehand? And so one thing led to another, so I ended up praying before the meal this last time, and I feel it was a good opportunity to really witness for the lack, because nobody wants to get up and pray, because nobody has hardly anybody has a relationship with the Lord, and therefore who are they praying to? So there's several of us, though, that do. So that has been an opportunity within my industry, but not so much within my job.
I found, at least for me, I do pray with some of the staff people who are Christians. If they're not Christians, they're usually not interested in praying, although I let them know if they have a concern or problem that I am praying for them.
I just found it in my past that when I did pray with some of the workers I was involved with, that it was a tremendous impact on them, tremendous. They see your example of the way you live, and they see you praying. There's kind of a conviction on them, even though they don't know the Lord. This conviction will come to them, and it really did enhance a lot of situations.
Yes. Laura.
How do y'all handle, you didn't see anything happen with James Bragg and all those other people. How do y'all handle the problem, people, making jokes about Christian people? What do y'all fix for?
Let's go first.
For me, because I get razzed a lot by that, I go back to what the issue is, and I tell them they need to focus on the Lord, not individuals who say they represent the Lord. Because any time you tell someone to look at a particular person as the model of what Christ is supposed to be, That person will never be that. I will never be that. Neither will you. And you're going to fall. I'm going to fall. And it's going to adversely impact their understanding of what and who Jesus Christ is. And so I say, don't look at the person. Look at the Lord whom that person is supposedly representing, because he will not fail. And so I go. That's how I deal with that. Going back to the real issue.
I'd agree. On those kinds of discussions, it's a no-win situation for me to try to... we're all painted with the same brush. Jimmy Swaggart painted us all the same brush. A lot of people who think I'm a Christian think I'm part of his camp or something. And you're never going to get anywhere condemning his actions and trying to show people this narrow road that I'm walking on. The only issue is to turn it back to them and say, well, what do you believe? What do you think? And so forth. Otherwise, it's fruitless.
When this happened with Swigert and then with Baker and some of the rest, as soon as I really heard about it and saw it, it may sound kind of strange, I said, Lord, what an opportunity. What an opportunity to share your faith. Because you know right the next day it's going to be talked about probably for in every break and every little, three-person conversation that was going to go on. And it was an opportunity to share. And so I almost look forward to somebody to bring that up and to focus back in on, what their relationship is and the idea that, that person, everybody has sinned. And if you want to go down the Romans road with them or whatever the case may be, it was a very good opportunity. So I almost look for conversations like that. But I think I'm a natural for, argue or discuss, let's say, and so I enjoy those kind of conversations.
Yeah. Joy.
Just a question about money, and I know that in the group of love, there are opportunities to say the same about money, and I think even Christians overindulging in part of the message. I was wondering what you do by the line and the example, because I know that
I'd love to tackle that first. That's something that's very, very close to me. As part of coming here, Bob Provost said that dress like you normally dress at your occupation. Well, I deal a lot of times with the growers that come in and they got mud on their shoes and they're in overalls or they're whatever. They may be worth $10 million, but that's the way that they're dressed because they're just coming in from the field. And probably 80% of our industry wear Levi's. So that's what I will usually dress in too. I mean, something that is nice and is very casual. So that's one thing out of getting out of the accounting field that I came down to that, wearing a three-piece suit at the time down to that, I very much enjoy. So dress is not really a problem. But something I dealt with, and I think that a lot of Christians look at that, and I had, interesting enough, a new Christian asked me recently that one of the pastors, that would equate with Dr. MacArthur, I guess, is building a home or something of million-dollar magnitude. And I didn't know all the facts, but it made me reflect on myself. Several years ago, my goal was to have a big house, to have a nice car, and to make a lot of money. And so I got into that at a bit. And I was in a very nice neighborhood, in a very nice home. And the Lord really convicted me to sell that home and to move down. Now, those of you that know income taxes very much, if you move down in a home, and I've lived in about three other homes, you pay taxes on it. So I suffered that. But I feel that I suffered because I was not true with what the Lord had given me. And in my example is that I did want to. Now, I don't condemn people people now, it's almost reverse discrimination. He says, well, you're so conservative. Why do you live where you live? You're the president of a major corporation in the valley, and you do what you do. And even my Christian friends have gotten down on me, for that, because I think it's convicted them. And I had a person that I looked at, my role model, that brought me along through a Timothy series. I'm not sure many of you are familiar with Operation Timothy, but that's where I had tremendous spiritual growth. And he was the person that brought me through, and I very much looked up to him. And he for 2 weeks, he told me what a mistake I was making by selling the home I was in. He loved it. And come to find out, as the years have come by, he has really been pursuing wealth, and he has taken his eyes off of Christ, which has been, of course, a big disappointment to me. But that's why I don't need to focus on him, but to focus on the Lord. And so anyway, it is a tremendous problem that each one of you, I think, deal with. Because what do you think of? You think of a job that's going to make a lot of money. And now, maybe not all of you do, but I'm sure that some of you will. You consider at least, how much money am I going to make at this job? And maybe instead of, where does the Lord, now you say maybe, where does the Lord want me to spend my life and my career? But, you know, sometimes we tend to gear it over to something we make a lot of money, which can be fine, because the Lord can use that. You know what, you hear a lot of people that have made millions, and they give 90% to the Lord, and they keep 10% for themselves. So the thing is, though, is to be a pipeline, don't be a tank. Don't be tanks that store up. Be a pipeline and just channel it.
I would only add that there is no satisfaction in money. And I can say that the Lord has disciplined me many times over the years with my handling of my finances. And you may look at us and say, well, these guys are very successful. They have a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of influence. They have arrived. Life is so much easier for them than it is for poor old me. Well, that's not the case at all. Money brings more hardships and more problems into your life than anything else. And that's why the Bible is so filled with instruction about how to handle your finances. And life just gets more complex. It really does. And having being where I am today, I can look back and say there's no satisfaction in having money, power, and influence at all. I'm in a role now that I can almost do anything I want. I can fly first class to any city that I want for any reason that I want. I can stay in any hotel I want. I can take anybody out to eat that I want. I have great freedom. But I can tell you there's no satisfaction in any of that stuff. It's all empty. It's lonely. And so the Lord has taught me many serious lessons over the years in handling finances, to the point that I really have no desire for those today.
I'm probably working through that even now, because of the position that I'm in at the firm where I've come from before. Starting attorneys, first year out of law school, most of the big New York firms and LA firms will start them at about $82,000 a year. That's just unheard of. And that's what's causing a lot of the fees in the legal area to just go sky high. Money obviously has a big pull. And as I said, my wife and I are kind of struggling through that even now. And I will admit that there are times that I've just blown it. And I felt the struggle, not in it, but from behind it, after I've gone through it. I say, you know, I really blew it there. And I have to get things right again. And so I will not deny the power of money that it can have on a person's life, but I'll also extend that to anything else. For you people, it could be grades. You're really struggling right now to get good grades. Why? So that you can get a top job, so you can get top money. How do you deal with that? What kind of sacrifices are you making in order to accomplish straight A's or a 3.8 average on a 4-1 scale? And is that right? So it really comes down to priorities. And I'm not going to say that it's not wrong. Please hear me. Moving towards a 4-point average, if that's what God wants you to do, then I suggest you do it. But it's between you and the Lord. It's all individual. And there's no clear-cut line. But understanding that there is a pull there. And so that's about the best I can counsel you on that.
This discussion goes on that theme. social involvement, like maybe drinking parties or this kind of thing, that sometimes you may be invited to. Where do you, I mean, you know, obviously, each Christian decides themselves if they go or not, what their motives are. But what do you do? Which things you go to, which things don't you go to, and why?
If a party is for drinking, I'll go regardless of whether there's drinking there or not. I don't drink. And some people know that I don't drink, and they feel comfortable with it. Some people know that I don't drink, and they get kind of touchy. When I before I was hired by the firm, they had a Christmas party at some highfalutin place out in Century City. A real expensive place, dancing, band, the works, open bar. And at that point, my wife and I had made a decision that not to dance for various reasons. And so I felt comfortable going there. What was uncomfortable is having some woman come up to me and ask me to dance. I had to say no. And she said, "I've never had a guy turn me down to dance before." I said, "I can explain to you if you're interested in knowing." She says, "No." She turned around and walked away. I mean, I said it in a very loving way. It's not like I'm saying, "Are you kidding me? Dance?" No. I play it pretty loose. And if people are surprised, I say, "Is it bother you that I don't dance or that I don't drink? Do you feel uncomfortable?" And if they're open and honest, they'll say, "Yeah," and I'll explain why. We have some of our best friends, unbelievers, at first were completely taken aback because we don't drink. And they wouldn't invite us to various parties because of that. Then as the friendship developed, they felt very comfortable with that. They have a glass of wine for dinner. My wife and I will have a Diet Coke or water. We have a great time.
It seems to me that with many people, I've probably interviewed 100 to 150 people, have hired everybody that's in our accounting department except some one person that's been there for 35 years, and have hired most of the managers that we now have because I've been here 16 years. And one thing that rings through and through is that most people, if you don't get the job that you're after, is, I think, you know, the Lord can start you at another position, and sometimes that experience in another position is so valuable. Most people coming out, young students, and this is what I was told by my people why I ended up making it, is that I was willing to get in and work hard. One thing that I have dealt with to the point, just as Dean had said, is that, you know, where's your job priority? I mean, it sometimes kind of takes you over. I mean, that's what I think a lot of us struggle with. But I would say you really have to be dedicated to work hard and not be saying, "Well, I've been here 6 months, you know, I'm looking for another promotion, I'm looking for this." I think the contentment atmosphere is so, you will be seen. You don't need to put yourself up. You know, people will get you passed over, and there'll be a lot of unfair things that happen to you. But if you work hard, and that sounds so, you've probably heard it 25 times, if you just work hard, you'll make it. But it is so true. It is so true. You arrive before you're supposed to be there at work, and maybe you stay a little after. I'm not saying you got to work 12 hours a day like I have done, but I'm saying that you need to be on time, you need to be prompt, you need to have all your assignments done when they're supposed to be done or before. You need to go over, you need to be attentive and listen. You need to shut up sometimes and listen, because there's more people out there that know more than you do, and that's the thing to listen to. And you will be recognized. You'll be recognized, and you'll be faithful, and truly the Lord will provide that.
And I can agree, there's some people that just come in and think they're going to just skate half the time, and they feel they want to go up. Those people sometimes make it. But the long haul, I was told, as coming on as an accountant, that for the company that I work for, that accountant staff is over here. It never works into management, never works into, your president or whatever the case may be. And only because I feel that the Lord provided me with a good work ethic that I was able to accomplish what I've accomplished. And because it sure isn't on my own ability. And so just remember to truly work hard and don't pump yourself up. You know, your work will stand for what you for what you have done.
Yeah, just to elaborate on it, you have to recognize that you have to start at the bottom. And you just got to get that in your brain that you're going to be on the bottom and you got to work your way up. You have to generate some value to your company, and that's at an entry level position. You have to show them that you're willing to come to work on time. You know, unheard of things. You know, a lot of people today don't want to come to work on time, and they want to leave early, and they basically want to horse around all day long. And it's so refreshing as a manager to have an employee who not only is conscientious but actually tries to do just a little bit more than what's expected of them. So refreshing, because we deal with so many people nowadays who don't want to work. You will have an immediate impact in wherever you start if you just try to do a little bit more than what's expected of you each day. And if you just try to get along with your fellow employees and try to help them do their job a little bit better, phenomenal results will occur. Trust me on that.
That's great. Our time is up for this session. I wish it could go on because it's extremely rich. These are great questions and terrific responses to the questions. What we'd like to do, and this is incredible. It just blows me away to think that these guys would give us a day. I'm glad we don't have to pay for that. Look at the time that's represented up here. But they want to spend time with you today if you would like to do that.
That's low.
And the sign-up sheets are in the back. And you're welcome to schedule appointments. If you see someone else has an appointment, go ahead and schedule along with them. And two or three of you can meet with them during one particular time. And so please avail yourself of that. This is a terrific resource that the Lord has brought to us. And we need to be good stewards of that resource and really take advantage of it. And we'd really like to thank you fellows for joining us today here at the college. We just really appreciate that. Let's close our session in prayer. And I'm going to ask Dr. Powell, would you close our time with prayer?